This is Jimmy Bullard, aka the Bulldog, and you are listening to the Fulham Focus Podcast.
Well, what would you have it? Two wins on the spin without our star player, another becoming a bit of a gem of a striker. And we're just one win away from that magic 38 points of kind of maybe sort of safety. On the pitch, all is rosy. We're going to be looking back to Saturday's visit of Brighton to the Cottage and look ahead to our trip to Molineux against a Wolves side with a record scarily similar to ours. In the chairs tonight, we've got producer Don and J-Mac as we swap seats from the last time we did one of these things together. As we discuss all things Fulham, I am Boney, and this is your Fulham Focus Podcast.
Fulham.
Gentlemen, this is good fun. I'm back from holiday, so I'm in good spirits. We've won a couple games. How's daddy life, J-Mac? You look knackered.
Yeah, I haven't been on holiday, mate. I had a lovely man cub son about 2 weeks ago. He was born on the 15th of January, and his name is Rowan, and I think he's really lovely, and I'm a big fan of his. And we lost against Villa, I think, a couple of days after he was born, but since then it's been Old Trafford and 3-0 against Brighton, so I'm starting to think he's a good omen now, and I've had some really nice messages and some really nice Fulham attire already from people like Wigo and Morgs and Matt Buclair and people like that. It's been lovely, so yeah, it's a really nice thing. I haven't put it on Twitter, so I'm going to talk about it now to our 12,000 followers or 2.5 million listeners about it. And I might occasionally just keep starting making a point with just, as a father, I understand this. So as a father, I will do that later on. But yeah, it's lovely. And yeah, where were you on holiday, by the way?
Went to Arizona. It was great.
Of course, you did.
It was sunny. Dear listener, we've literally just had this conversation. So so poor old Jeremy. So it was.
No, it's fine. It's just when you said Arizona off air, I thought you were talking about a different time. I forgot you were still there. I've had 4 hours sleep, everyone. Anyway, we digress.
Let us jump to the United States and check in on producer Don. How are you, sir?
I'm lovely. Very well.
Good. He's sitting there in a t-shirt. J-Mac and I have got hoodie zipped right up to the neck. So is it February? No, it's March now, isn't it? Oh, bloody hell. And my glasses have broken. So if I start rambling, it's because I can't read my notes. So I apologize for that. But anyways, let's get cracking, because it's always fun to get together when we chat about a win. It's always fun when it's two wins on the bounce. And I just always like beating Brighton. There's something about being in Sussex, about half hour north of Brighton, that is just really nice, because everyone around here thinks they're amazing and I don't. But what's the sort of takeaway notes from that game? Well, we're going to probably spend a bit more time looking forward to Wolves, but another solid win, another slightly different setup. How do we feel about three points, three goals? Happy days.
Well, you mentioned that the record against Brighton. And I actually always have it in my head we do really terribly against Brighton, because when we were in the Championship around 2014 to about 2017, we always lost against them. I think that was under Chris Hughton, etc., etc. And I've always had it in my mind they're brilliant, but our record against them is actually very good now. And we always seem to have their number, and I'm loving it. Yeah, it was honestly a fantastic result. The performance that we put in, I think arguably one of our most complete performances of the season, actually. It's just so wonderful to look on the bench and have wingers. We have wingers again. We have strikers on the bench. We have a striker in form. It's absolutely magic at the moment. I will say that I thought that even though we had a complete victory against them, I will say that I feel like slightly disappointed that they wouldn't have maybe had a few more goals. I think we could have maybe scored actually some more in this game, because we just really had De Zerbi's number, and I'm just thrilled about it. Yeah, it was a really good result. Really good result. And I think now that points tally that we're on, I feel like we're safe now. And as people know me, I worry about everything, but I feel very comfortable we're going to stay up after that result.
Don's got the smile of someone who's going to burst that bubble.
No. If J-Mac says Fulham is definitely safe, I feel like the weight of the world is off my shoulders now. Because if he's saying it, oh my God, you know, life must be really good at Fulham right now. Because no offense, J-Mac, but he's the biggest pessimist.
Well, as a father, I'd like to say that I'm now very optimistic. It's really changed.
Good for you. Good for you. And you know, it's the best time right now to go ahead and flip that switch and to change. Back to back great wins, you know, great performances, people coming in and playing like we've never seen them play before, or that we always hoped they would play, you know, or how they would play. And life is good. Life is really good. I will say, it does present a dilemma, you know, for the next game we'll talk about. But our midfield, I would not want to be Marco having to pick our midfield for the next game right now with choices, you know, people coming back from suspension, people doing really well that we weren't really expecting them to pair as well as they did.
Well, we'll come back to that, because this is a nice dilemma to have. And, you know, I think it's only fair that we start with Rodrigo Muniz, because I'm going to say it, and I hate that I'm about to say this, but he's been Mitro-esque these last couple of games.
Yeah, I have a bone to pick with actually about this, because we all talked about the Mitro comparisons maybe a few games ago, and I think a lot of people on Twitter were saying don't be ridiculous, and a lot of people on our Fulham focus group were saying the same thing. And yeah, of course, it probably was a bit of a jumping of the gun to suggest that he looks anything like Mitro just after one good performance, but really, he really, really is. I just wanted to say that to all the people that were like, nah, well, yeah. I think he looks...
Okay, I'll put a pen in that. yes, he is playing great. He's playing much better. He is showing his strength, which is like Mitro, but that's only on the hold-up play, like, you know, getting ahead to the ball or being able to bring people in. What he's not doing still is he is not a big passer. He does every now and then, and it does come out to do some good things, but Mitro used to, you know, he would defend from deep and create from deep. And I don't see Muniz doing that. If you can remember and understand what I'm talking about, if that's clear.
As he can't pass, let's talk about his assist for Wilson's goal.
Yeah. Now, one of his only passes in the game was like the assist. Like, you know, he was brilliant.
And that's a great point. And that's where every now and then, and if you looked at his stats, I think he had a total of 2 or 4 passes the entire game.
Right.
It was very low.
He had three completed passes, and one of those is an assist.
Yep. So when he does get it, or at least this game, he really made it count. My point is, Mitro used to, you know, he would find people from across field and he would long ball it or cross the ball, you know, and everything else, and he would make things happen. So there is that aspect that Muniz needs to develop if we're going to start saying.
I'm gonna point to J-Mac because I think he's about to say the same thing I am.
Well, I don't know, mate. I'm just going to say that I feel that Muniz isn't obviously in the same vein as Mitro. We're just getting a bit excited is all. But I will say that, like, even though he seems a bit young still, extremely young, he looks like a fucking Labrador, actually. His tongue's always out. He looks so energetic and, like, just really happy all the time, Muniz. He's a really cool, really nice kid. Like, I really enjoy watching his spirit. And, like, the thing I'm trying to say is that the header that he scored with and the hold-up play that he had and the pace on it, there is something happening there that really does remind me a lot of Mitrovic. Like, a lot, in terms of just his swagger that's going on. And yes, it probably will come to an end. The purple patch might end. But this is a guy who Marcus Silva entrusted from, I think it was Flamengo, and there was a raw talent there, and we got him. And he spent the first season with us under Mitrovic, who scored 43 goals, I believe. Yeah, it was 43. And was one of Europe's most underrated strikers. And then the next season, the same. I do feel like something's been learnt under both Marco's instruction and the, you know, the protégéship, if that is a word, of Mitrovic potentially in the past. It, something is happening here, and it is quite exciting to see.
I think that's the key. Sorry, Boney. I think that's the key. I think the key is Marco knows his strengths and is getting the team to play to his strengths, okay? And that's the sign of a great manager, is realizing, listen, we can't just keep doing the same things that we used to do with Mitro. We can't be trying to put balls into places and expect him to just turn up, which all of a sudden he has in these last two games. I think he realizes that he has strength, Muniz has strength, and he is playing to those strengths. And I think it's brilliant how Marco can take a player, find what he needs out of that player, and get that player to do what he needs.
Yeah, I think the point I was going to make is similar to both what you guys said, so we're all in agreement, happy days. But I think that the benefit of this purple patch at the moment is the team's playing in a way that he doesn't have to play like Mitro. He can have those aspects of the game, that sort of physicality and stuff, and he's got pace, which is quite nice. But yes, the rest of the team isn't playing to him, expecting him to do Mitro things. They're playing like it was two seasons ago. He's getting the ball in ways that he can do things with. And, you know, the Craven stats shared his last five games. And I don't like XG, but apparently in Brighton, his XG was like 0.1. So, yeah, right. Happy days for that. But it's, you know, he's winning about 50% of what he's going up against, which isn't bad. His passing's terrible, if you look at the stats, but we know that anyways. It's positive, but I think what's good is when you've got, same as when Raul Jimenez was in form, it raises the people around him, and we're seeing that with Wilson as well, who's in sparkling, almost old-school form.
Now, see, the other thing about Muniz that I'm really liking, I'm old school. I want to see that guy who somebody comes in on a tackle and he takes a hard tumble and like a weeble wobble, he just pops right back up and keeps on going.
Sorry. Okay?
He doesn't roll around. If people don't know what a weeble wobble is, Google it. It's very old and it shows my age. He doesn't roll around on the ground. He's not howling, you know, 90% of the time. If you notice, when he got the ball and he headed it back to
Wilson,
Harry to be able to score, he hit the ground and he just popped right back up and he was going right for goal, thinking, okay, if this gets spilled by the keeper, something goes wrong, I'm here. I want the opportunity. And that I really like. I really, really like that.
The strength is like improving like game by game. And I'm at the point where I'm thinking maybe putting him into my fantasy Premier League team, because I feel like...
I won't do that.
But what I will say, someone that I did have in my fantasy Premier League team a lot last season was Evan Ferguson, right? Now, Evan Ferguson is someone that's tipped to probably be sold by Brighton for like something stupid like £120 million to Man City or Man United at some point, maybe even Arsenal, who cares? But the point I'm trying to make is Muniz at the moment looks better than Ferguson did at like a lot of games this season and a few last season as well. Everyone's been talking about him. You've got, you know, the Rest Is Football podcast talking about him, Gary Lineker, Alan Shearer, Ian Wright's talking about him on different shows. It's just really, I'm so happy for the guy, and it's really interesting. And I'm just trying to now just look at, see how many years he's got left. How many years has he got in his contract? I'm like, I think he's still 2025 with a year in option. Oh no, 2026 with a year option. I think, you know, the whole comparisons with, you know, R9, everyone's saying he's the next Brazilian Ronaldo. I mean, wonderful. Let's just keep on living in the dream that is.
I want him to just keep going under the radar. Just keep going under the radar.
And keep him out of your fantasy teams, dear listeners.
Yeah, I'll do that.
Just jinx everything. I do want to talk about Harry Wilson quickly, because the last little period, I think he's gelling well. We're seeing him do that cutting in onto his left again, which is great, which, you know, that some old school people I know out there thinks a right-sided winger should have a right-sided foot to actually be able to cross the ball. But we're not going to get into that, because the thing that everybody keeps bringing up is the return of our Nigerians. And I think we're going to come to the Paulinho question later, but I think Bassey and Iwobi through that sort of middle left-hand side as well just shores everything up to the point that the pivot that we've seen for the last two games of Reed and Lukic has had an opportunity to gel that maybe when with them at AFCON wasn't allowed to happen. I think those four players in these last couple games have been superb, and that's allowed us to cope with Joao being out suspended. Am I speaking out of one's eris, Jeremy?
No, I've always thought that Calvin Bassey reminds me of just basically another Polina in the centre-back position in terms of his dominance, his iron, just how industrious he is on the ball. Like, I mean, we'll talk the ball that he, the diagonal, you know, lob that he does, quite Joakim Andersen-esque, just on the other side to cause one of the goals was fantastic. Bassey has been phenomenal, and Tosin obviously as well, but we've talked about him. Bassey being back has made us instantly change as a team, and it has managed to make us tactically be okay without Polina, in my opinion. The Lukic and Reed dynamic now, we have a little bit more nippiness, in my opinion, in central midfield. A bit more diversity, a bit more of a natural double pivot of just people, Reed and Lukic, taking it in turns to sit, go forward, and sit and go forward. And because you've got that steel of that fantastic connection of not just actually Bassey with Tosin, with beside him, it's looking really strong. So yeah, in answer to your question, Bassey has been wonderful.
I can't find it right now. I was just trying to find it again on my other computer. He's actually, there was a stat I saw. He's not far off from Ream as far as his ability to pass out of the back, to find that incredible pass or that nice diagonal long ball or, you know, whatnot to create chances. So as far as somebody to, you know, take Reem's place and succeed him, I think they found an excellent candidate. And I really hope, you know, the Cons and Fulham can just dig their fingers in and hold on to him, because I think that's one position in the summer we should not be looking at. You know, we do not need to worry about that. We can move on to so many more important things.
Yeah.
We can just worry about the right-hand side.
Well, that's it. But never lose a left-footed centre-back, particularly if they're fucking really
they're
good.
They're gold. They're fucking gold.
So if you know, if Bassey's the way he is at the moment, you just keep hold of that, because you will bet your bottom dollar that a club like Liverpool will be looking at him at some point, you know.
And he is not afraid to go forward and carry the ball himself, you know, and he's got the strength and the ability. So that's just.
And to be fair, right, Issa Diop isn't afraid of doing that either. And I like Issa Diop's courage to do that and breaking, you know, into going into high lines, etc. But I will say that he has far more many mistakes in him than Bassey. Bassey is just able to completely nudge people off him and just looks like a complete beast. And I love him. Love the guy.
But the pairing, I really hope, Tosin, if you're listening, please sign the contract. Just sign. My God. Quit looking for the stars. Think about, you know, hey, the great future you could be here at Fulham.
Don't,
the things
don't,
that you
don't
can
dream,
happen.
My man. Don't dream. Just
I'm
stay
trying.
At Fulham.
I'm trying.
I mean, the rumors are that he's off to AC Milan, maybe. But, I mean, you look at his Twitter account, which is still in his bio, no Fulham-related things. But he is very much a part of the team and, you know, talking about what a great win, great team belief. So there is a chance there, and hopefully Marco Silva can galvanize that sort of spirit. And I just want to say, as a father, I really think that Marco Silva can do that, because it's all about just getting people together and loving your team. And as a father, I get that.
I miss those days of new fatherhood when everything is golden and bliss. And
it's about me.
Yes,
yes.
It's all about that. let's chat again in about 6 weeks.
I want to do a pod with J Mac when that child hits the terrible twos.
Yeah. It's just going to be a podcast called As a Father, and that's going to be it.
let's chat about Reed and Lukic for a bit, because I think that's going to lead us in nicely to our Wolves preview, because poor old Sasha's not had the greatest time of it at Fulham. He came in with quite a bit of hopes from everybody, and he's sort of been that square peg in a round hole for the last couple 18 months or so. These two games, Fulham sitting a bit lower, him in sort of a hybrid 6-8 with Reed doing the same thing, giving and going, that magical thing that could never happen for England with Gerrard and Scholes back in the day. They seem to be on a good wavelength. They're doing bits of each other's jobs and bits of Paulinho's jobs as well. It's just working, the two of them sort of filling in that big hole that the big man has left. How do we feel about that? Because Paulinho's back, but we've had two very good results and two very good performances. Does this lead into a sticker twist sort of conversation?
You know, I think, number one, if you're right, and I mentioned this earlier, it's going to create a hell of a dilemma going forward for the next couple games. But I think what happened here is Reed and Luke, they've read each other so well and understand the partnership that they understand, okay, I'm going forward, you've got back. If you go forward, I'm going to drop back. And they're covering each other really, really well. So they're almost doing the same job. I will say, I think Reed does not do as well going forward. I'm not trying to put him down or anything. I love Reed. Mm. He's the energizer bunny that the team needs. But I do think Luka just kind of brings a little bit more something going forward, creativity-wise and stuff.
So yeah, I agree with that, Don, because Sasa Lukic has been very well known for his ball progression when he was at Torino, for instance, in Italy. And recently in the last transfer window, I think, if rumours are to be believed, there were strong rumours that Napoli wanted him. And Napoli don't buy a player that's rubbish. And we know that from them taking Anguissa off us, who is one of the best progressive ball players in central midfield in Europe, technically, at the moment. Well, certainly was last season when they won the fucking title. I think Sasa Lukic has so much more to offer, and I know Tristan, obviously, Fulham focused Parish, will testify to that, because he is... I just think he hasn't found the right role for him yet, and now it's starting to blossom with maybe a bit more of the muscle behind, like I was saying earlier, with the centre-back partnership. But yeah, there's something about Sasa Lukic that just drives forward a lot better. He doesn't have necessarily the sort of the magic of a Tom Kearney or the sort of the tackles and the nippies back and forth that Reed has, but he just drives, and I really want to see more of that. And I think that, you know, the story has been Muniz, of how Disney it's all been for him, and one of the greatest turnarounds since, you know, Berdinho and all these other people for Fulham. But I do think Sasa Lukic is on to a big redemption story too, and I'd like to see more of it, to be honest. So I would maybe split the difference. You could put Paulinho there instead of Reed and have Paulinho and Lukic together like it was at Arsenal away earlier on. But I don't know. I think we need to get used to life without Paulinho, because he's definitely going to go. So I think, you know, as a father, you need to caress your team and give people on form the chance.
Kick your older son out to keep your younger daughter around. Is that what you're saying?
That's right. Yeah.
There you go. The best advice. Actually, you know, the other thing we got to keep in mind, okay, about that pairing in the midfield, Reed and Lukic, it didn't allow. Marco knew what was going to be happening, or I think he knew what was going to be happening. I'm going to give him full credit. And he changed a little way we were playing. You know, when we are more attacking, because Paulinho's in there and stuff, or at least we seem to be more attacking, we're more aggressive. You know, we're more get the ball forward and try and do ticky-tacky and all that kind of stuff. I actually think, and against United especially, but also in Brighton, and possession stats show that this is what happened. We held the ball more. We didn't sit back, but we kind of packed ourselves in tighter, more organized. And Reed and Lukic were a main part of that. They're the ones that prevented all the pressure coming on to Tosin, all the pressure coming on to Bassi and everything. And that allowed our wingers and everybody to get more forward when we had the fast break or the chances, like Muniz getting the ball over the top, you know, from Byrne or those kind of things. So my fear is that there's going to be a different tactic and it may not work against Wolves. I'd rather stick kind of with what we've doing than bring Paulinho back in and all of a sudden say, everybody go forward. He's going to crunch tackle anything that comes our way. You know what I'm saying?
I think the thing that's been noticeable is we've not been playing that sort of possession football that we have been. It was 30% of the possession we had on Saturday, which is different.
I love it, just to say. I love it. I love the dynamic tactics that Marcus Silva's installing like at the moment. I think, you know, I'm stealing this from Kish, another Fulham focus of this parish, but like just college tactico, Cottage Taxi, though. He just made a good note of just how we're adapting a sort of a 4-3-2-1 at some points. We're playing incredibly narrow at the moment, just allowing our sort of our wingers to actually go in and cause a bit more sort of attacking midfield sort of play. So you had like Andreas and Wilson just behind Muniz with Iwobi and Reed working together, and then Lukic sitting behind. I just feel like Don's right that actually the tactics for Wolves might be a bit different, because they don't play this kind of a possession style and, you know, four at the back like Man United and Brighton do. They're going to be playing five at the back. Paulinho maybe actually could come into this game. So I think that's a really good point.
Let's have a look at some of the fantastic stats that Sam Diamond has sent us through, because it makes for interesting reading. Now, my only stat for this in my prep, because thankfully Sam sent all the good stuff, is we've got a scarily similar record to Wolves. Like I said in the intro, you know, they've won 11, we've won 10, we've both drawn 5, they've lost 11, we've lost 12, same goal difference, all of that business. Yet when we go to Molineux, we don't do particularly well. We haven't won in 7. It's not been a great time for our trip up there. Let me see what we've got here. They are unbeaten in the last 14 home league games against Fulham overall, 10 wins, 4 draws. And the last time we won, according to this, was a 4-0 win in April 1985 when Ray wow. Houghton and Tony Seeley got... Ray Houghton scored and Tony Seeley got a hat-trick. So there you go. That's bringing some things back. We were chatting before we came on air recording. The game at the Cottage was spicy, to call it, to say the least. Lots of VAR, but we won that, so we've got an opportunity to do the double, which would be nice. And you know, the Wolves, though, have a very good home record, but they're out. They've got a lot of players out injured at the moment, and I think Wang Yi-Chan being out is going to be a good thing. But Saar and Neto could be back, as it's looking like they're on the bubble for there. So there's positives, there's negatives coming into that. But I think the way we're going, we've got a good chance at this, don't we, Jamie?
I think so. If you look at who scored, for instance, and just say who's their highest rated players of the season so far, it's Yi-Chan, who's injured, Neto, who's injured, Kuna, who's injured. The one behind that is Lamina. Obviously, we all know him. Again, I really underrated player. I actually kind of miss Lamina a little bit, but anyway, that's a story another time. But I will say that, yeah, I think there's a really another really good opportunity here. I think we were really lucky against Man United with the absence of Rasmus Højlund. I think we were very lucky against all the injuries that Brighton had. I think now, with the form we're on, I think we're 6th in the form table at the moment, and Wolves are 9th,
yep.
Maybe 7th, I can't remember. 9th. Yeah, 9th. Great. So I feel like, again, we have a really nice opportunity here to go even further up the table and actually get a really nice, quite be it rare, away win at Wolves. I'm really looking forward to that, because I think it's doable. The injuries again, it looks like we can do something.
Don, how are you feeling?
I would agree. I think there's a hell of an opportunity here. Wolves are in a bit of a bad spot, you know, injuries, and their record right now is kind of all over the place, win, losses, and draws. Some of the people that beat them, you would think Wolves would have stomped on, and then Wolves turn around and do the incredible and beat other teams that you would think they'd get their asses kicked. So I think, like I was saying earlier, even if Paulinho comes back in, I want to see kind of that same tactics right now, because that's what Newcastle just did to them. And that's how Newcastle just beat them 3-0. They didn't go crazy straight at them. They didn't try and hold possession the entire time. They, you know, just kind of took their chances.
Yeah.
And they would catch them on the break. And I think that's what we could actually be doing and continue doing, or what that's what we've been doing and should continue to do. So even if, say, Paulinho comes back in, I know this is harsh. For me, Reed goes to the bench, Lukic stays in, and that's me. And I know a lot of people want Tom in and everything right now, but I think Tom is still that super sub that when he comes on, he creates chances and helps cleans up things and
yeah.
Steadies the ship, you know, just really steadies the ship. in those first, especially like 15, 20 minutes of the game where everybody's going hardcore at each other and the game hasn't really settled down, I kind of want a little bit more than Tom in there right now. And I think Lukic could be that person in midfield.
I'm always reluctant to start Tom Kenny away from home, but this one in particular, I think it's going to be quite a hostile environment. They're going to feel quite hard done by from the result that they lost against us at the Cottage a few months ago, due to, you know, refereeing, VAR, whatever Gary Neal was crying about. I think Kenny should come on off the bench to control things if we manage to get a win early doors. And the same with Reed. I like the idea of Polina and Lukic for this game. Don't play them at the game that they want. They're one of the best actually counter-attacking teams in the Premier League right now. Don't give them that opportunity. I feel like we can just do actually, maybe actually a similar game to what we've been doing in the last two games. And hopefully Adama Traore can remind them that they should have given him a longer contract, because we haven't talked about the fact that he scored a very nice goal in the last game.
I was saving that for this part of the discussion because...
Oh, sorry.
That's all right, because he's another player that was brought in to much baby oil fanfare. And we made lots of jokes about whether or not he actually exists. And boy, is he making us realize that he is there, because his appearances off the bench have been dynamic, and especially those last couple games where he's either created or scored. He's going back. I would say he's probably got something to prove as well. And the question is, you know, do we see him as we did against Man U coming on a bit earlier? Than that. Sorry, Man U is about the 80th minute, wasn't it? And he was quite a late sub, he says, quickly scrolling up to his stats. There we go. Check the notes, Boney. Check the notes. He came on 84. He gives us that option to change something late or make a dynamic change early. And I think that's just... Yeah, we've got options, guys. This is great.
It's great. It's so good. And I wouldn't change it either. I wouldn't change the way we've been using him. I wouldn't start starting him. I wouldn't bring him on any later than 68th minute, to be honest, or something like that. Because with the injury that he's had, I rather he's so fast and he's got such strength. And every time he comes on, you can just see all the players just looking like, oh, fucking hell, here we go. And it's wonderful to watch. I think the whole reason, we were under the cosh at Brighton for quite a strong 10 minutes. They hit the post, etc. And as soon as Adama came on, they weren't up for pressing us as much as they were before because of his pace becoming, you know, from breaking their lines. And I feel like that's something we can utilize once again at some point. But I wouldn't start him. I think what the use we're making of him is brilliant. And like I said, let's not injure him again. He's got a lot of upper body strength and quick feet. We don't want him to just break all of a sudden from exhaustion and too many minutes. So yeah, I think if we just keep using the way we're using it, we're going to have a lot of fun.
Because I
think that's the key. I'm sorry, Boney. I think that's the key is this his strength and speed. And so if you're bringing him on as a super sub in, say, the 70th minute or so, okay, when it's a tired defense, and holy crap, you've got this, I don't know how big he is, but he looks like a monster, you know, on his size, coming at you with that kind of speed and strength. And then you put on Bobby Reed, who, hey, kudos to you and your knowledge to look around and see that run for the goal, you know, against Brighton. If we can do that again, where, you know, it's a tired defense, you know, it's been a hard game, hopefully back and forth. We really put Wolves under the gun and held them down. And then you bring on Bobby and him and let them just go at them. I could see some more great things happening, some really good things. So
Troy's 5'10". Tall and about 5'9" wide, I think.
Exactly. But it's also nothing new that he's been doing. I just think it's unfortunate about his injury. He almost did something really fucking wonderful against Arsenal away. You know, he almost scored the winner. Just keep doing the plan that Marco has for him, and I think we're gonna, like I said, have a good time.
He was a free transfer as well, wasn't he? So he was released. So yeah, this could be nice and tasty. The I did want to point out that sort of, you don't really want to mess with that front three at the moment with Iwobi, Pereira and Wilson playing as it is.
They have such a good understanding of each other. Just let it roll.
I have been critical of our returning Brazilian international in the 10s a lot.
Oh, I have as well, but maybe we should talk about that.
Yes, because I wanted to just put my hand up and say, having rewatched the Brighton game, he was doing a lot of stuff that you don't normally get the kudos for, and I thought he was pretty good.
But it's quite easy to sometimes think that he's not doing a lot. I mean, I swear every time I see him play, he kind of fluffs an attack or a pass isn't made. I know he's a workhorse, and that's where his sort of bread and butter is, and he's brilliant at it, and he's been so instrumental in a lot of our key chances, the statistics would say, and creation. But I don't know. I feel like I'm getting wedded to the idea of having an old school number 10. So, for instance, when Bobby Reid made that pass to Traore at the end of the Brighton game, I thought, oh, that's what a number 10 should do. I bet Pereira wouldn't do that. But actually, it's different. Marcus Silva, the system that we're using, like Kish and Cottage Tactico said, we had a completely separate idea of what we think actually a number 10 is doing nowadays. And I feel like actually Pereira probably is doing a very, very good job. So yeah, like you, I feel like I need to just eat a bit of humble pie on that.
I'm still going to complain about him in the group chat because it feels like that's on brand, but he, but we need to call it out. I think he's been doing a very understated, but a very effective role. I think probably more than just the last two games. And,
he's been called up for Brazil as well. Yeah. We should mention that, I suppose. Yeah.
Well, yeah. That's
pretty awesome. Good.
and they're sniffing around our striker as well, which is nice.
And he's still the leading person for assist, if I'm not mistaken. I think so. Everybody thinks he disappears, and I do. I think he sometimes disappears too. But he's still the leading person for assist in our games. And he's just been so unlucky. I've lost track of how many times he's just put it wide or hit the woodwork or overran, you know, the whole play.
I just do a go at Wolves, that's it.
I think he's got something against trees because he seems to hit the woodwork far more than anything else. He's got 5 assists so far and 1 goal. So
that's
not doing too sharp. That's in all competitions, according to the old transfer mark thing, which, of course, J-Mac has the premium subscription for.
Of course, yeah. I'm a big member. I feel like he could tell he's hungry for it as well. He missed a chance against Brighton from far out, like a Harry Wilson-esque sort of strike, and he looked really fucking pissed off about it. So I feel like he's definitely keen to score a goal. And hopefully, like I just said, it might be at Wolves. That'd be great.
And the thing that I think the thing that makes me prejudiced against him, because he strikes the ball like Ronaldo does, doesn't he? That sort of top-down, outside-of-the-foot thing that gets all the swerve and things. And I just have bad memories of those going against us whenever we played that SOB. Anyways, but then who cares about him? Because he's off in Saudi doing nothing. Let's... yeah. Like a few others. It's my phone keeps going because for some reason people are talking about the Brighton manager going to Chelsea, which I don't understand. So that's...
Oh, is that official?
No,
it can't be.
It's not. It's just sort of rumory things.
I will say De Zerbi is the most Chelsea-looking manager ever in terms of the fact... Maybe I'm just... Probably because he's just Italian. But just in terms of like all the past managers they've had over the last 20 years, De Zerbi looks like a proper Chelsea manager. Like, really. Yeah.
My bigger fear is they come in for Marco.
No.
Well, funny enough, like Fulham transfer have just said that West Ham are looking at Marcus Silva, but I'm like, fuck off! There's no way. It's just not going to happen. Like, it's just not going to happen at all.
I'm going to sully myself here. I was having beers with the chaps from the Chelsea fan cast the other day, Stanford Chick and the others, and they were saying nice things about us, which makes me, you know, I did check my wallet as well because you never know with that luck. But it's... that place is a mess, and you know, for all our complaining about owners and things like that, they were taking the piss about ticket prices and things, but they have some big concerns, and not just on the pitch as well. So yeah, I think what's going on there, a bit of, was it snaffing for it, yeah, enjoying their misery. But it would be on brand for them to make a move for yet another Brighton manager, because that'd just be funny. And yeah, but anyways, that's enough. I'm going to stop talking about them because let's start talking about Rodrigo Muniz again, because he's looking at Sam's notes here, which they're fantastic. You know, his 5 goals are the most scored by a Fulham player aged 22 or younger in a Premier League season than our very own Collins John did in 2005-2006. Now, CJ got 11. So yeah, there's the bar, Rodrigo. And if you need any tips, we can put you in touch with Collins. He's, I'm sure he'd be happy to help. But the other thing,
this isn't good podcast gold. But I think I saw a stat as well about he's now scored the most consecutive games since Luis Zaha in the Premier League for us or something like
has
that.
Has he? Wow,
is that right? Which is great. Yeah. I love that.
This is great source. And then okay, so the only player since the start of February to score more Premier League goals is Saka, which is
nice.
Which is a good stat. So thank you for that, Sam. But that's just showing the sort of the rich vein of form our young Brazilian is in, to go all sort of BBC on this. These are fun times. And these are the times when, as football fans, we cherish. Yeah, as a father, we get these moments coming up from time to time. And J-Mac, remember to hold them in your heart, because as we all know, Don, it's going to be long periods, much like Fulham, when things don't exactly go to plan.
Well, look, as a father, I will say that my son at the moment is sleeping really well, which is unusual, but I'm fully prepared for him not to sleep well when I'm taking him to Prague next year with our European fucking tour with the earmuffs on. It's going to be amazing. I'm very excited about our rain pitch report. I don't know if this means we're actually going to get eighth. I don't think so. It's not possible, surely, but I'm enjoying the ride because I feel like we deserve it. We've been really, I think arguably actually this season's been more enjoyable than the last, even though we are more likely to end with less points than we did compared to last season.
I think
just with the
I was just gonna say last season started really well and then tapered off. This season started pretty poorly and is getting better, and I think that's why I'm enjoying it more.
There's just been better scalps. There's the Arsenal draw, the Arsenal win, the Old Trafford win. The Everton win for the Carabao Cup, the Tottenham win for the Carabao Cup as well. It's been a lot more fun. It's amazing how you can have more fun this season when actually technically you don't get the same, the record breaking points that you need from Roy Hodgson. Still,
it's been a difficult season. But let's be truthful, okay? We're loving this little bit, but we started out where we didn't have a full team. We really needed more players to come in sooner. They didn't. Marco had to get them in, had to get them settled, get them to gel with everything, So by the time they did, then we start getting a little bit of going, and then we get injuries. Then we start maybe getting some people back. Then they got to go off to AFCON. Now we finally got them back. So hopefully these last 11 games will finish strong. Now, do I want them to finish strong enough to go to Europe?
I don't think we're ready for it.
No, I thoroughly enjoyed the last time we were in it. As I look up at the wall and I have my Hamburg ticket now framed, and
I'm just worried the bench isn't strong enough.
This is the thing, and I think Bryce.
And if we have another shit summer,
this is the Brighton effect. You look at what they're going through at the moment, and you just think,
yes,
no, thank you. We'll take another season, please. And I think now that we've got the one player everybody's talking about in the transfer thing with Paulinho, Tosun, of course, what he decides to do is there. But with a bit of luck, manager signed a new deal. It's providing West Ham or whoever don't come sniffing around him.
No, they won't.
There's a bit of solidity there that means we could kick on quite nicely next season. And that's maybe when we can start hoping for something more.
Fingers crossed, this summer becomes what should have happened last summer. That I'm not saying Tony Khan, please go out and spend trillions of dollars. I'm just saying, let's be smart. Let's, for once, I know this won't happen. Maybe get them in, not at the end of the season, but more like a week or two before the end of the season. That way we've got some time with them. But get in some key players. Get at least one or two, like, oh my God, players that could just really take this team easily into fifth or beyond, Because I really think the backbone is there. The contingency is there to be incredible.
Fifth. Don't get too carried away.
Yeah, you did say fifth. I was like, did he just say fifth? That's crazy. But I mean, I love it. But I Willian said the same thing in an interview recently. I mean, I know he's just basically blowing smoke up our ass because it's the club he plays for and he's just got to say some some sort of good press release for us, but he did say that all the foundations are there for Fulham to be a really top club in terms of its location, in terms of its manager, in terms of the money behind it. I don't know what's going to happen with the meeting, I think, this Thursday, to do with maybe now having UEFA laws for profit and sustainability rules. Maybe it means that we can spend a lot more. Apparently it does. Yeah. We'll see.
Well, if those luxury apartments or whatever that they're building up on top of the Riverside, wasn't that supposed to be coming up soon to be available?
Those things will never be finished. Yeah, I'm just going to go and dab
it. I thought they were going to be up and running soon or ready for events or something like that.
Any revenue stream is a good revenue stream. And I think that the UEFA thing hopefully will sort of clear things up. I think something's got to be done especially with this Everton, Nottingham Forest, Man City business, because it's all getting a bit...
Oh, yeah, the point deduction. Yeah. I mean, how are you feeling about... the relegation battle at the moment. I mean, it's not really much of a battle. I don't know why I said that word, but it seems that I feel like it's now pretty much over, that Sheffield United and Burnley are down. And I find it very funny with Burnley at the moment that for a quick rant from me, that Vincent Kompany, who has the audacity to think it's cool to wear a fucking cap with a suit and not get critiqued for it, but also just because he, you know, 100 points in the Championship is no mean feat. That's great. But he hasn't adapted his style to think, you know what, maybe we're attacking too much. Maybe we should actually defend for a change. I feel like Burnley are having a bit of a Scott Parker season under him, where the whole media love him, like love Vincent Kompany, and aren't actually giving him enough pressure at all. But then again, maybe they love Vincent Kompany and they're ready to come back up next year straight away. But I'm just having a rant now. It's annoying.
Burnley, I thought, were going to be the dark horse, and all they've become is glue. So... It's not good.
It reminds me of how everyone thought we were going to be the dark horse when we came up with Slav. Yeah, it was kind of like everyone thought, looked at our signings, looked at our attacking play, and thought, oh well, they'll be all right, they'll be 10th or something.
But they sacked, you know, the Khan sacked Slav before. You know, traditionally it was about middle of December that the team suddenly
good old Liverpool game sealed it.
That's when the Slav's Fulham teams came to life, and they let him go too early. So there we go. But yeah, I think that whatever happens with the Forest thing is going to be interesting, because that makes the whole Luton, Forest, Everton, Brentford, that sort of, it's just a six.
Well, what's annoying about it is that Thomas Frank recently said in a press conference he really hopes that the situation becomes clear with Nottingham Forest soon, because he's basically shitting himself looking at Brentford's form, that they can go down with a points deduction so they don't have to worry about themselves. Because yeah. How about it? The best run club in the world in a potential relegation scrap. Who knew?
I mean, you throw those point deductions in, that whole 15th through 17th, 18th, that becomes really, really juicy, really, really interesting. You know, because there are some teams there I wouldn't mind seeing go down. Can we just do five? Not knock out five and bring five up. That'd be my.
Well, that's the other thing, isn't it?
Be careful what you wish for, man.
There's all that. That talk about, you know, expanding European leagues and going back to,
oh dear lord,
small. Was it? There was even someone talking about a 16 team top flight and things like that. So, yeah, that's not good. Granted, it'll make season tickets probably even less affordable, as you're only getting however many games that is at home, because those little charges the same, but you'll very rarely go to the game. J-Mac.
If I may just add a quick point, we're talking about the relegation battle and Sheffield United looking as good as down, after, especially after their really bad defeat against Arsenal the other night, 6-0. I want to say that our fixture against Sheffield United, don't know exactly when it is away, is looking like there's going to be a little honorary mention to Tim Ream for how he conducted himself for Basham's injury. I saw this just recently on Twitter, so that's quite
nice.
Fair fucks to Sheffield United for
March
that.
30th.
March 30th. That's my birthday.
Ah,
yeah.
There we go.
It is about, this whole pod's about me. I'm a father, and that's my birthday. That's fantastic. But yeah, that's
to be fair, that's why,
because I'm a father, I can't go. You see,
J-Mac, that's the point. That's the reason they brought me in to help co-host, because it was all about you, and they were getting sick of it.
I don't blame them. I don't blame them.
I think that's a high note to leave it.
Yeah. Hey, one more question. We talked about this, and I just wanted to bring this up again in our discussion. Okay, so who's going to be captain for this game with everything going on?
That is a good one. I'm going to stay on brand. It's going to be Muniz. The lad can do no wrong. Give him the armband. That is a joke, ladies and gentlemen, but that's what I keep putting in the group chat, so I'm just going to go.
It's spiritually a very good idea in terms of like how well he's... the redemption arc that's going on.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
So in our chat, it was interesting because... I guess it was Brentford. Sam brought up that Brentford did away with the whole captain thing, and they just had like individual captain players on the field for their areas.
And it's working so well.
And Luke, Luke brought that up and said, well, you know, a captain isn't really as important as it used to be, that it is actually more important to have players on the field in different positions that control those areas, you know, bark out orders and keep everybody organized. And I agree with that. But I also think that there needs to be that one person on the field that is the captain that knows how to get all those, you know, people on the same page, or knows how to prevail with cooled heads and, you know, not get people red cards and sent off. And I think that's what Tim Ream did really well for the longest time when, you know, he was the captain on the field, even though when Tom came on, Tom would take over. And I think Tom actually, at least this season, he has shown that he's grown and he's definitely more of a captain than I ever thought he was 5 years ago, 6 years ago, yeah. 3 years ago. So I still think the captain's role is really important. I know, J-Mac, you're saying Leno.
I don't think Kenny will start the next game, so I don't think he'll be captain. I think I would go with Leno just before his class, for his age. For his experience at big clubs. I mean, you know, you have a lot of history of goalkeepers being captains of, like, Hugo Lloris, you've got Peter Schmeichel, you've got Buffon. I mean, like, I know it's not ideal for a captain to... just for one game, I think it's fine. I'd like to see Leno as captain, but if not, then my other option would probably be Polina, if he starts, of course, just because I think he will be leaving, and I'd like him to get a captaincy under his belt before he leaves us, because he's just been a royal tapestry of just having him here.
If João Polina is captain, he's totally getting sent off.
Yeah, well, no, it might not. That's the thing. It might help him not get another yellow card. We need to make sure that he doesn't get another suspension now. He's got five attempts not to get a yellow card. Is that right?
Well... To be fair, it's just sort
the rest of the season.
Referee rule book, isn't it? Paulinho tackle, yeah. Yellow card, no matter what point of the game. But there we go.
Also, I'm forgetting other like really good goalkeeper like captains. You've got Casillas for Real Madrid, and you've got Manuel Neuer as well. So yeah, give it to Leno. I forget what I said about.
So back on the yellow cards and Paulinho, you know, if he gets five more in these last 11 games, he misses three games. How likely is this going to be that could happen?
I don't think so.
He gets yellowed so often now, they target him. I'll bet you that the referees just walk on the pitch. They pre-write his name down so they don't have to worry about misspelling it or anything, and they just know it's coming. All they do is put down the minute.
Yeah, but we're not facing John McGinn again, and John McGinn has his number, so like, I think we'll be okay. I don't know.
But I'm serious, you know, in all likelihood, at the rate he goes, he could reach that mark.
Well, like I said before we started, that just means he'll be nice and fit and rested for somebody to come in and spend £60 million on him in the summer. So,
300.
But yeah, inflation is a bitch, J-Mac.
Yeah, no, that was that. I was literally just giving you the OK symbol, as in like let's wrap this up.
As a father, it's time to
as a wise father you want
to go to bed.
The picture is clear for me now. As a father, you'll understand one day, all of you. You're all fathers. You know, I'm talking to the listeners, not you guys. You guys are all fathers.
Yeah, we've got the wrinkles and the big bags under our eyes for having teenagers and uni students in us. You've got all this to look forward to, mate.
Mate, I'm on 4 hours sleep.
You've mentioned that once or twice. Yeah.
Have I said it already on the pod?
We're gonna put that out as the tweet. You have to drink every time J-Mac says he's had 4 hours sleep.
The key there, J-Mac, when you're that tired, you have to make sure that the baby bottles are separated from the beer bottles. Don't accidentally in the middle of the night at 3 a.m. grab the wrong bottle for the wrong person.
Yeah, I understand. The kid, you get very Heston Blumenthal.
And that is fatherly advice.
Thank you. As fathers, that we should be united in that, and that's great.
And dear listener, there you have it. We're going to wrap this up on a public service announcement, which is please don't give your children beer until you really do need them to go to sleep. But remember, their hangovers are a bitch. So until next time, when we return to talk about Wolves, that'll be next week's show. Don, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
J-Mac, get some sleep, mate.
Yeah, I will. Pleasure to be with you guys. Nice one.
And dear listener, thank you so much. Like I said, we'll be back again when we see whether this lovely purple patch we're on continues up in the Black Country. Until then, please do take care of yourselves. I've been Boney, and this has been the Fulham Focus Podcast.